time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Lily Defo.
I'm Storin Ampofus.
In the headlines, second FPSO named after late President Mills as Ghana prepares to deliver first oil from 10 fields by August next year. President Mahama underscores importance of education in promoting gender equality in his address at UN General Assembly. Government procures 4 vessels to aid movement of goods along Volta Lake. And Nigeria's President Buhari submits first cabinet list to Senate for approval 4 months after resuming office. First a summer with the rain and before.
The storage and offloading vessel FPSO named after late President Professor John Evanson Thomas is set to deliver its first oil by August 2016. The inauguration of the vessel has paved the way for the vessel to leave the joint shipyards in Singapore by the close of December 2015 and enter Ghana territorial waters by February 2016. President John Dramani Mahama has raised a number of issues during his address to the UN General Assembly yesterday. While the President emphasized the importance of peace and dignity of the human race, he also underscored the need for education promoting gender equality. Vice President Kwesi Mensah-Alpha has inspected 4 vessels procured for the transportation of goods and services to and from communities dotted along the Volta River. He described the ferries as superb machines and appealed to the operating authorities to expedite the various stages of testing for use. And Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has formally submitted the names of his nominees for cabinet posts to the Senate for approval after more than 4 months in office. No names have so far come out, but President Buhari is expected to assign ministerial roles after the names have been approved.
Radio Ghana, meeting the news challenge with credible information. News now indeed. So Ghana is set to deliver its first oil from the Chinebua, Enyira and Ntum fields by August 2016. This follows the formal inauguration by the First Lady, Lavinia Mahama, of the country's second floating production storage and offloading vessel, FPSO, named after late President Atta Mills. The inauguration of the vessel has paved the way for the over $1.5 billion vessel to leave the Jurong shipyard in Singapore by the close of December 2015 and enter Ghanaian territorial waters by February 2016. The drilling in the 10 fields is expected to inject at least $20 billion into the oil industry in the next 5 years. We'll bring you more in this report.
The conversion of a double hull centennial dual tanker into a storage platform began in October 2013, and within 2 years, work has been completed on the new vessel. FPSO Professor John Evans Atta Mills. This is the country's second FPSO after the first one for the Jubilee Fields and named after Ghana's first president, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. FPSO Professor John Evans Atta Mills has a length of 330 meters, 56 meters in width, and a depth of 31.8 meters. FPSO Professor John Evans Atta Mills has a processing capacity of 80,000 barrels of oil and 170 million standard cubic feet of gas per day and an oil storage capacity of 1.7 million barrels. It was a nostalgic moment characterized with fanfare at the Jewel Shipyard in Singapore when the First Lady, Mrs. Lavinia Mahama, pressed a button for the official inauguration of the vessel. She said the naming of the FPSO after the late President Professor John Evans Atta Mills underlines the role the late President played in the discovery of the tin fields. She was optimistic that the 10 project will improve the economic fortunes of Ghana.
I am delighted to be naming today Ghana's second floating production storage and offloading unit, otherwise known as FPSO. The 10 project is the second commercial development of Talo and Partners in Ghana. The conversion west of the FPSO in Singapore demonstrates international collaboration between Ghana Singapore. I am happy to hear that the same project is on track to deliver first oil in the middle of 2015. This is evidence of commitment, experience, and determination of the same project partners to turn Ghana's oil potential into reality. We in Ghana are excited about this, because it consolidates our position as an oil and gas economy.
For the Ghanaian delegation, it was a moment to remember and restore the virtues of the late President Mills. According to them, the late president had personal interest in making the TEM project a success story, and even after his death, the project is on course to achieve its objectives. The chief executive of SEPCOM Marine, Wong Wen Sun, said the FPSO, Professor John Ebenezer Mills, will perform its functions efficiently. The chief executive of MEDEC, builders of the vessel Toshiro Miyazaki, said his outfit will provide the needed maintenance to make the vessel achieve its aim. The chief executive of TALU, Aiden Heavy, said the inauguration of the FPSO Professor John Evans Mills will boost and further develop the country's oil sector. The entire TEM project is estimated to be in the region of $7 billion, and most of the major hurdles have been crossed to ensure successful completion of the project by the 2016 set date.
And that was the news desk report on the inauguration of the country's second floating production, storage and offloading vessel, FPSO, named after late President Arthur Mills.
Vice President Kwesi Mensah-Arthur has inspected four vessels procured by government for the transportation of goods and services to and from the more than 700 island communities dotted along the Volta River. He described the four ferries as superb machines and appeals to the authorities at the Volta Lake Transport Company and the Ministry of Transport to expedite the various stages of testing and get them inaugurated on time for people to use, says Ilya Report.
President John Mahama about 2 weeks ago announced at the Durbar of Chiefs and People of the Southern States in goal of a comprehensive program to augment the fleet of ferries on the Volta Lake to efficiently serve the more than 700 communities dotted along the Volta River. The four vessels are made up of a ferry which can carry more than 250 passengers, a number of vehicles and goods. It is also fitted with two engines. The other three are water buses with a capacity for 52 passengers each. They are faster and will carry only passengers. Vice President Mensah-Arthur said the inspection was necessitated by a request from the Karachi Mura for a ferry when he joined the people of Karachi to celebrate their Yam Festival last Saturday.
So we were in Karachi for the Yam Festival last Saturday, and the Karachi Mura made a request that they needed a ferry that would take the people up in the land. And they also wanted a water bus, so promised that the president had already made a pledge that he would replace the own ferry that they call the pontoon. And without taking a ride in it, the superb machine, and I hope that very soon after they've done the number of testing and so on, the commissioner can be able to take it to Kerikachi. With respect to the water bus, and then those are much smaller vessels that don't take goods, just for passengers. And we're talking to the chairman of the GLTC for the minister to arrange to at least to have one that is dedicated to the Akosombo Karachi route.
Minister of Transport Jifa Atibo said the ferry will soon sail to Kerikachi to be inaugurated.
Families got separated, some moving to the west, some moving to the east side of the lake. And their only means of connecting east and the lake. It is important for us to provide efficient and quality transport facilities for them. It's been a challenge because the old vessels are no longer functioning properly. And I recollect that during the time of our late president, Professor Jay, you know, he promised the people of Kibukwashi to purchase a modular ferry for them. And this is the ferry one on which we are traveling.
The ferry and the water buses were assembled by the Volta Lake Transport Company at Akosombo. Seti Iya, reporting for Radio Ghana.
President Mahama has asked world leaders to maintain peace by initiating ideas and solutions that will ensure that the dignity of the human race is respected and protected. He said the absence of war does not mean there is peace, but rather, nations must strive to achieve equality and the respect for all. Addressing the 70th UN General Assembly in New York, President Mahama said the very institutions that are expected to promote peace are the ones violating their mandate.
Peace, as so many great men and women have reminded us, is not just the absence of war. Peace is also the presence of dignity in one's life. It is the achievement of equality in one's endeavors, and it is the respect of one's humanity and attendant rights. If we are to discuss the road ahead, we must do so with a new language, with ideas and solutions that do not exist only in the annals of history. And we must begin with an examination of our most basic institutions, the governmental, the cultural, the societal, and the personal. Some of the very institutions that were set in place to protect and promote peace are the very ones violating their mandates and engendering fear in the public. When one race of citizens feel as though their lives don't matter, when refugees successfully escape the horrors of war only to be further brutalized on foreign soil, when the already traumatized victims of conflict are violated by international peacekeepers who were sent there to ensure their safety and well-being, then we as leaders, we as a world community, must stop being silent and start taking action. We must create change, because fear serves as fuel for disillusionment and apathy, for hatred and xenophobia, all of which are the seeds of which allow to root will ultimately grow and bear the rotting fruit of war. What we learned 70 years ago with the formation of the United Nations is that we must each be our brother's keeper. We must allow ourselves as people, and even more so as nations, to belong to one another. In Ghana, we are also reviewing our rules of engagement to create a balance between the maintenance of law and order and the basic rights of our people to free speech and free expression. Since the beginning of time, cultural and societal traditions have been used as markers of identity. Kente cloth is as defining to Ghana as kimonos have to Japan, and as quinceañeras are to Latin America, or as bar mitzvahs are to Judaism. Yet some practices and beliefs, though considered traditional, have no place in our world today, and they should not be permitted a place in the world that we are planning for the future. Among those traditions are the ones that refuse individuals, particularly women and children, their basic rights and force them into situations that relegate them to a life of vulnerability, to poverty, to disease, and other unbearable hardships.
Turning to Ghana, President Mahama highlighted programs his government has initiated to promote gender equality.
Most of the world's poorest people are women. Currently, we create programs and policies to address this imbalance. Yet regardless of how successful they may be, they are not permanent solutions. They do not solve the ultimate problem, which is the vast equality that exists between men and women that so many traditions have inculcated over the years. In Ghana, through the Livelihood Empowerment Against Poverty Program, we have provided cash grants to a total of 77,000 households throughout our nation. The program, which is aimed at poverty alleviation, also entitles its recipients to provision of free health care through the National Health Insurance Scheme. In order to address the issue of child mortality and malnutrition, preparatory work is on the way to earmark disbursements for pregnant women and mothers of children under the age of one. It is not a secret that when it comes to gender equality, education is the key to change. It is a problem that must be addressed at its root. We speak often of ability and access. Those are honorable concepts, but the actuality is that being able to get an education and having access to an education is not the same as getting an education. In Ghana, we've made tremendous progress in achieving the Millennium Development Goal target on universal basic education. We instituted a Girl Child Program, which encourages parents to send girls to school. And at the primary level, we have achieved gender parity between boys and girls. Now, what happens beyond the basic level is another matter altogether. Young girls are often taken out of school and married off. Africa has the highest rates of child marriage in the world, following only Asia. It was the intention of the United Nations 1964 Convention on Consent to Marriage and Minimum Age for Marriage and Registration of Marriages to abolish the practice of child marriage. And yet still, in West Africa, 2 out of 5 girls will be married off before the age of 18. These young girls are faced with increased maternal mortality rates and increased STD rates. They are subject to the sort of poverty that is nearly insurmountable.
President Mahama also used the occasion to highlight some positive strides Ghana has made over the years in the areas of democracy and economic growth.
In recent years, signs of emergence in Africa have generated great hope and very high expectations. Many African nations have embraced democracy, and free and fair elections have become a regular occurrence on the continent's calendar. Several African nations are seeing an acceleration in economic growth and a more than reasonable measure of success is being achieved in reducing hunger and poverty on the continent. My own country, Ghana, has benefited greatly in achieving the Millennium Development Targets. Ghana is considered one of the bright lights of Africa, a place that was once derisively referred to as the Dark Continent. Our nation boasts a strong, stable democracy with an economy that has been growing positively for more than two decades. While we are exposed to the current uncertainty of the international markets, strong cooperation with our multilateral and bilateral partners is seeing positive movement towards fiscal consolidation. Moreover, our current agenda for transformation is aimed at diversifying our economy and accelerating growth. My government is committed to maintaining strict fiscal discipline in order to stabilize the macroeconomy and stimulate growth and business activity.
President Mahama speaking at the 70th UN General Assembly in New York.
This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra, the major story. Second FPSO named after late President Mills as Ghana prepares to deliver first oil from 10 fields by August next year. Government procures four vessels to aid movement of goods along Volta Lake. President Mahama underscores the importance of education in promoting gender equality in his address at UN General Assembly. And Nigeria's President Buhari submits first cabinet list to Senate for approval 4 months after assuming office. We're back after this break. Welcome back. The Metro Commission says it has engaged the services of IT experts to help clean the county's metro road. This has been necessitated by persistent calls for a new register to be compiled for next year's general elections. The opposition NPP, the CPP and the PPP say the current register is bloated. They contend that the credibility of next year's poll hinged on a new electoral rule. The EC called a meeting with the political parties yesterday to discuss proposals submitted by various parties and groups on the voters' register and other matters. The chairperson of the commission, Mrs. Charlotte Tosay, said about 30 proposals have been received, 15 of them from political parties and the remaining from civil society organizations and individuals. She said a public forum will be called next month to discuss all the proposals submitted. Mrs. Tosay said the EC is investigating allegations by some parties regarding the voters' register.
So far, as of September 22nd deadline, we have received a little over 30 submissions. 30. I think 15 political parties made submissions. The rest of the submissions came from civil society organizations, and we had some from faith-based organizations, we had some from IT companies, and private individuals, and the couple were anonymous. Now, as a commission, we are going to evaluate these proposals, and we are also investigating in the allegations which have been made by some political parties, especially when it touches on the integrity or the security of our IT systems. We are getting independent and outside expertise to help us look into those allegations. But while we're doing that alongside, we are also evaluating all the submissions we receive, particularly submissions towards cleaning up of the register, and we are going to put a team together to look into this. Our plan is that at the end of October, in the last week of October, we will be having a forum at which the media will be invited, political parties, civil society organizations, other stakeholders and state institutions will also be invited, and then we can all engage. Parties can make presentation, other people who have submitted presentations and we think that the value in it would also be invited to make presentations, and we can all engage, and hopefully we can find some reach consensus or come to some resolution on the issue of the voters' register. But as a commission, we do not believe that this should be a partisan matter. We do not think that it is a decision that must be taken by political parties. And indeed, we do not believe as a commission that there are only binary positions to be considered, as in register is okay, new register. We think that there's a lot of value in also the listening to all the views within the section. So we are listening to all that, and we are engaging parties with engagement as a Collective and also the Liberal Party would also get independent technical expertise to come and support us in that process of evaluating what the concerns really are with the register and how we can all together work towards having a more credible register and a more credible electoral system.
In future, this is Mrs. Charlotte Rassay.
The five-member committee set up to investigate the petition against the Commissioner for Human Rights and Administrative Justice, Madame Laurette Savivian-Lamte, has submitted its report to the Chief Justice, Regina Wood, in line with Article 146 of the 1992 Constitution. Pursuant to Article 1465 of the Constitution, the Chief Justice has forwarded the report to President John Mahama. This is contained in a statement signed by the Judicial Secretary, Justice Alex Pukwa Champong. The chairperson, Justice Eminyebua, a justice of the Supreme Court, remarked that the parties cooperated fully with the committee. The Chief Justice thanked the committee for its work.
Government has agreed to pay the National Association of Graduate Teachers, NAGRAT, and Coalition of Concerned Teachers, CTT, their incremental arrears within the next 10 days. This was after a county meeting between the two bodies and government. Government has committed itself to pay all amounts owed every teacher in 10 days, and an MOU has been signed to that effect. The signing was witnessed by the Minister of Employment and Labour Relations, Haruna Idrisu, and the Chief Executive of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, George Smith Graham.
They pleaded with us that they will not stay till the end of the meeting, but one thing is clear, they have had closed-door meetings with their various stakeholders, and they are pleading with the unions that if you give them 10 days, prior to that, NAGRAT had already formally informed the House of the notice that we have given to government and National Labour Commission that within 7 days, that is by the 7th of October, if our issues were not resolved, we were going to embark on strike. And based on that, the minister also pleaded that he wanted to add 3 more days to the 7 days and make it 10 days. If you give them 10 days, we will work around the clock and see to the amicable resolution of the problem. Because nobody will want to see a confrontational stand on issues, whether we fight or not, they will resolve them. We also said, okay, if that is the case, it's not a big deal. We wanted to the discussion to go on for us to see, and when the discussion started, we realized that clearly the General Education Service in particular will need to gather a lot of data to be able to make this payment. And so we have agreed to the 10-day moratorium that has been proposed. And having agreed to that, we believe that we should be able to work within the 10 days and get something concrete to tell our members that will convince them enough to be able to restrain themselves from embarking on.
And you mean a 10-day period where the 4 demands you outlined should be met? Is that what you are saying?
Yes, we are going to sit down after the, I think before the 10 days we leave in the lab, we are going to sit down and they will have to tell us what they have done, what they are doing, and then when everything will be ready. We also have our own formal positions that we will put on the table when we meet.
Yes, President of NAGRAT, Christian Adepukwu.
Online commerce, banking and money transfer comes with the risk of exposing vital information due to technology. This brings to the fore the need to address safety issues associated with technology. In this regard, a workshop to ensure that African countries minimize the risk of technological fraud is underway in Accra. It is to brainstorm on how to ensure cyber security. Addressing the delegates, Deputy Minister of Communications, Atosapong, said countries should equip their human resource with the requisite skills to handle cyber issues. Joyce Teacher reports.
Ghana, for that matter, most African countries, in the last 2 decades, have witnessed an increase in mobile technology. The increase in internet connectivity, mostly in urban communities, and telecommunication companies have transformed the mode of business transactions. Mobile money transfer has become common, with online banking and shopping gradually catching up with a lot of people. But the safety of the information put out there, which is a tool for hackers, is lost on most people. Apart from that, cybersecurity is of utmost importance to nations. A forum is therefore being held to address cyber fraud in Africa. Addressing the gathering, a Deputy Minister of Communications, Atosapong, acknowledged the benefits of information technology, but drew attention to the threats. He talks about challenges facing nations and institutions.
If you look across how people are implementing threats on the cyber space, see that these are sophisticated people who are one step ahead of the game. So it's important that we ourselves also keep up and ensure that even on the financial side, we have the resources to ensure the infrastructure, the firewalls, and all the systems that needs to be put in place to ensure that we protect intruders from breaching our protocols.
Mr. Atosapong mentioned the investment the government has made in cyber infrastructure.
We have invested over 30 million euros in developing our Eastern Corridor cyber optic project. That starts in the Volta region and ends in the northern part of the country. Our objective is to put in place the infrastructure that industry actually needs, that institutions actually need, in order to ensure that wherever we go, there is some element of infrastructure within the telecommunications space.
A Deputy Director General of the National Communication Authority, Albert Enyimfo, advised institutions and individuals to change their attitude to prevent cyber attacks. He identified the setting up of an incident response team as a way to address the issue.
Joyce Dechi reporting.
In foreign news, the military general who led the short-lived coup in Burkina Faso has sought refuge at the Vatican Embassy a day after the army opened fire on his supporters in the presidential guard to force them to disarm. General Vio Bedi and Blair is sheltering at the Vatican